Hi guys, and welcome back to the Canine U podcast. Today we are going to be talking with our new trainers, so you can meet our trainers. We had to change the title of our podcast today and actually split it into two because we were just talking about all of our experiences and so much more. So stay tuned for next week when we actually talk about dogs versus humans. Today's episode is going to be meeting our trainers. So here we go. Okay, guys, welcome back. I am here with Adam and Rachel.
Hello.
Hi, guys.
Hi, how's it going?
And they are our new trainers at K9U, and I'm super excited for you guys to meet them. I think they're wonderful, and I'm so excited to ask them a million questions so you guys can get to know them. Okay, so here is our first question. Is I always ask, how did we find each other? How did we meet? I met Adam first through my mentor, who is also, your mentor.
Yeah.
And she kind of put us in touch, and that's how we started working together.
Yeah, pretty much. And then she got into contact with me, had me come down and do some training and do some kind of like, pretty much like a little test, like a little Mr. Miyagi kind of like thing. But we liked it, and we kind of grew up around the same area too, so I think we kind of like, we vibed in that kind of sense too. So I think it was really like easy to just kind of get in and get everything because we both had that similar training style already. So I think it kind of worked out on that aspect for sure.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, so that's kind of how we found. So we kind of like were trained how to be trainers the way that she wanted us to be trainers.
Very boot campy.
You guys are like carbon copies of each other as far as training history. So that's right. When I come in, I'm not sure exactly where you guys come from with like your knowledge and what your like methods and past is. So I feel like I always have so much more questions about about all the stuff as I've come in.
I mean, you still like know a lot of the things that we do. I think just because it's not, it's you went a different route, like with maybe with different people, and you learned different things. But I like that too, because I feel like it's nice to, I'm just not one of those people that like, I'm like, I know everything and like, I'm the best. It's like, no, I like to learn. Like the reality is like all these dogs have different feelings and emotions and behavioral issues and everything going on with them. And I think that it's kind of stupid of someone to assume they know everything. Because we obviously don't. It's like, we're learning new things every day about dogs. And obviously if there's someone in the mix that has a way different experience than others, then I think that's amazing, because then we can all learn like different things in different ways. We came from like, me and Adam came from the same kind of background, but I still think like there's different things that you've learned, especially because I think ABC updated their program like the past like 2 years or so. It's like very different from what me and Jenny kind of did. Because they have like different rules and stuff, because I went back flipping through the pages
online. That's where I feel I have a connection with Rachel too, because we we went in like around similar times, so we kind of have that same information when it comes to ABC. And it's like when she talks about certain things, I'm like, okay, yeah, like, all right, I get you, I know she's
from the textbook.
No, like they really did update it, because there was a lot of things that they talked about that was like different from what I said, and then I'm like, I don't remember that, but yeah, I understand that. I just don't remember it. So yeah, then Adam was working with us for a bit. And then Rachel just kind of popped up on our radar.
How did you guys? Yeah, how did that go down?
It was the ABC job board, because we're all alumni. I think you must have put out some sort of
that we were hiring.
Posting or like hiring. And I always just check the ABC job board, just because like I'm always interested, because it says it shows you jobs in your state, and California is such a big state that usually it's
so
like
much
in North California,
like so far,
but you guys were 15 minutes away from my house.
Oh my God.
So I was like, you know what, I'm gonna inquire, I'm gonna see what this is all about, and it ended up being great. So
that's true. Awesome. I think I always think it's really funny how people find each other, so I always like to talk about that. Okay, so next question is going to be, what made you guys want to become a trainer? Whoever wants to go first can go.
I'll go first. So I don't think you guys even know this about me. When I was like 10 years old, like obsessed with dogs. I've always been obsessed with dogs. Mm-hmm. And my aunt, she gave me a dog training book, or not dog Aww. Training book. I got a dog training book and a dog encyclopedia.
Oh,
and
that's so cool.
Literally memorized it. Like, wow. It's an old edition. Yeah. So it's like, there is some new additions in like dog breeds, especially within the past like 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I was absolutely obsessed. And so anytime I went into public, my dad would say, what do you think that one is? What do you think that one is? What do you think that one is? Why do you think it's that one? And so I have like this almost encyclopedic memory of like all of these different dog breeds. I'm not as good at my sight hounds as I am my other breeds. But I absolutely loved that. And then I think what really pushed me to be a trainer specifically was, you know, I know I wasn't ready. I wouldn't be able to kick it as a vet or a vet tech.
Oh, yeah.
And my first independent dog, my first dog that I got as an adult, she was a pity, and she Aww. Was a rescue, and yeah. she absolutely had some major behavior things going on. It would have been such a blessing knowing the knowledge that I know now back then, and it would have been such a lifestyle change for me and my roommate at that time
mm-hmm.
if I had the right resources and someone like me to like who I wanted to become. I wanted to become someone who could make that sort of lifestyle change for other dog owners.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So like so it's very personal to me because, you know, I love that dog, but I wasn't able to help her.
Yeah.
And it it really put such a strain on me and my roommate to the point where like we separated, we didn't become friends, like we didn't stay friends because there was just such a strong strain happens. In the house. They really take control, which is I think the subject of today. Dogs really can take control of your life in ways that you exactly. And it's not, you know, it was never her fault. It was never the dog's fault. It was just we weren't equipped and given the right amount of information and experience to be successful in that situation.
Yeah.
So looking back, I think that's probably the like number one thing that really pushed me to like have a passion for dog training.
Wow. Yeah. That's such a nice story.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a really good story.
That's actually funny too that you say that about the dog encyclopedia because.
Did you have one too?
No, well, I got one now. But it's funny because when she was doing attendance the other day too, she was like going very well based off of the dog breeds, and I was like, "Wow!" God. I was like, "Hey, you really know your breeds, don't you?" And she was like, "Yeah." So that makes sense now. Wow. But no, that's honestly, it's very similar to my story as well. You know, I grew up around dogs. My dad was really into dogs. Like he would always train mostly like, you know, pit bulls, bully breeds, American bulldogs were kind of like our family dog. We had multiple of them growing up in pits. And, we really, same thing. Like we didn't do the best with our first dogs. Cause you know, it's like same thing. Everyone kind of has those first dogs, your first introduction. It's, you know, and it was a long time ago when training was different and, you know, it was a lot more compulsion. So we didn't, it was like going to training and stuff like that was almost worse than trying to do it yourself.
Right.
So I felt like as I got older, that's kind of a little bit wrong. And I wanted to find a better way to kind of train dogs and also like to do right by those dogs that I didn't get the proper training. And because of that, they didn't have as fulfilling of a life as possible.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And a lot of the dogs too. Like I was kind of a crazy kid growing up, and we got a family dog kind of in high school that was more my responsibility,
mm-hmm.
and I kind of just ran with it. Like I took that dog everywhere. Like I learned really a lot about training, a lot about the more modern style of training.
Yeah.
And I started training him based on those ones, and he was like the greatest dog that we'd ever had. Unfortunately, he passed away last year.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
And that was one of the big things. Like I had started because of him.
Yeah.
And now I got around a year and a half ago, I got Spencer, mm-hmm. which is my dog. Yeah. He was a rescue, and they even said that he was animal aggressive and child aggressive.
Wow.
And he's now, he's like a, he could be a nanny dog pretty much. He could be a therapy dog.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's,
that's so sweet.
Yeah. It's those kind of, it's those things though. It's like the mistakes that I've made with dogs before have really driven me to want to do better by them and kind of show people to like how much dogs could do for you.
Yeah.
Like, cause they literally, they, he kept me out of trouble for throughout high school and stuff like that. Like,
I mean, they do give you a responsibility when you're younger. You gotta take them out, feed them, you know, bathroom, all that stuff. And
If you really take it seriously, it's a huge responsibility.
Yeah. Really it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the bottom line for most trainers is you probably had at least one dog in your life, unless you grew up in like a family of trainers.
Yeah.
If you came to training yourself, I feel like you had one dog that was like your turning moment of, I just want life to be better for this one dog, because like you just want to increase their quality of life. Like if I had known what I know now with my first dog, that pity, her name was Bella.
Oh.
If I had the resources and the knowledge that I had back then, I would have been able to like open up her world to somebody. Right, we could barely go on a walk together.
Aww.
Like it was just such a bad situation. And I looking back, I wish I could have known like all the things that I know. Do you have a dog like that?
I'll tell my story because I know you guys don't know, and I don't think I've talked about it recently on the podcast. So the reason I got into like loving dogs, I came from a Hispanic background, and I'm not speaking bad about my Hispanic people, but I just think if you're a Hispanic family, for the most part, you kind of think dogs are dogs and they kind of live outside and that's what they are. They're just animals, whatever. I mean, not everyone's like that, but I think people are more evolved now. But that's kind of how I started out my life, and I just was like, oh, it's just a dog, whatever. So when I was 6 years old, my family had German Shepherds. I think at that time we just had one. I don't even know her name. I think it was Princess, maybe. I don't know. And I loved playing with her. So I went outside as a 6 year old did without parents and just not caring about what happened. And she was eating. And of course, the children and dogs, while they're eating, is such a bad thing when they're unsupervised, obviously. So I just went and pet her. And she didn't know it was me. She turned around and she grabbed my hand. But I think in that moment, she realized, oh, whoa, that's her. Like, you know, like that's Natalie. Can't bite her.
Mm-hmm.
So she just grabbed me. And then like I could see it in her eyes. Like she realized who I was. She let go. And then she licked my hand and went back to eating. And I was like, what the heck? And I still remember that day. It was so crazy because I was so young. And I just remember like, this dog is so much smarter than I ever even realized. Mm-hmm. How did she just know it was me and then not to do anything? So that's when I really started like wanting, you know, when you're a kid and you don't know anything, you're like, I want to be a vet. Yay. You know, like I had the same thing.
I was a ballerina, horsey, puppy, colt doctor.
Oh my God.
As a kid, that was my thing.
So, you know, I started going down that path. I had my first, my family that owned the dog, they moved out. So we didn't have any dogs. I ended up getting another dog because I would like beg my parents. My mom said that we went to church one time. I forget how old. I think it was like 7 or 8. We went to church and she saw me like praying like at church because we're Catholic. So we, you know, we're praying at our little stools. And she's like watching me and she said, you look so like focused and so serious. And she asked me when I finished, like, what were you like? Out of curiosity, like, what the heck were you praying for so long? Like, you took a long time there. And she said that I told her, I am praying for you guys to get me a dog, for God to give me a dog, because I really want a dog. So they got me a dog. My mom's friend, it was so weird, it just so happened, my mom's friend that she was working with for a long time, they never even said anything about dogs, but my mom thought this story was funny, so she shared the story with her. And few weeks later, month or so passed by, my mom's like, hey, my mom's friend's like, hey, can you please give me a ride? Like, I really need a ride. And I live really close. She's like, okay, yeah, whatever. And she's like, come inside, come into my house. She's like, no, like, I want to go home, whatever. So she's like, fine. So she goes inside, and there's, like, puppies everywhere. Oh my God. My mom's friend's dog actually had a litter, and when she heard the story, she was, like, so touched by it that she was like, pick a dog. Pick a dog that you want to take to her. And my mom was looking around, and she said from the beginning, I named him Lucky after the 101 Dalmatians. Uh-huh. She said, my dog Lucky, he's a poodle mix, would follow her the entire time she was there. Just straight up started following her everywhere. Mm-hmm. And she's like, well, I guess this one picked me, so I guess I'm going to take this one. And so they brought him home, and I had a dog. He was a little wild one. He had some issues as he got a little bit older. But, you know, as a trainer, I guess you can look back at it. Like you guys are saying, we can look back at it and see, okay, there was these issues as to why this happened. And because we were doing this and because of that, that's why everything was going on. So I really, really love dogs. And I really was growing up, even through high school, graduate. I volunteered at the animal shelter for 3 years. I didn't stay there. I just did like off-site adoption events because I couldn't stay there and see them and all these horror stories and stuff. So going through college, I was like really unsure of what I wanted to do, but I knew I wanted to do something with dogs. I ended up saying, what if, like, I'm one of those inspectors at the airport with their dog and, like, I can, like, you know, like, the drug-sniffing dogs or whatnot, whatever they use them for. And then I was like, okay, you know, then I'm like, well, maybe I can make dog food. Because there's, like, so many things, like, I was, like, thinking. And I just didn't know.
Yeah.
So I actually really wanted to be a dog trainer because I found a beagle at the shelter. My sister wanted a beagle. We got the dog. And he literally changed my whole family lifestyle of the Hispanics. The dogs are outside. The dogs live there. The dogs this and that. And he changed our whole entire life. My family never wants their animals outside anymore. They're always inside, sleeping in a bed. You know, they always have their, you know, their own, like, special meals for birthdays, for Christmases. You know, like, special snacks. And, you know, it's crazy how really people say that's just one dog changes your whole entire life. And then after that, I would remember that I was always watched Animal Planet and watched all these like training shows and dog shows, dogs, vet shows,
I'd binge watch it,
and every time we'd watch it, the commercial for ABC would come out, and that's the only reason, the only thing I would know about. Well, that was like, I think I'm a little older than you guys, so
I've never seen an ABC commercial before.
I'm a little older than you guys, okay, I know, but there were ABC commercials before they were high and mighty and, like, all these popularity stuff. They were still established back when I went there, but anyways, so I was like, you know what, I'm gonna try it, see what they say, blah, blah, blah. So that's how I became a dog trainer. But I do love that those stories because I feel like everyone has their own story and it's so deep and meaningful, like what you guys have shared. And I think the common theme in it is really just we wish we could have helped the other dogs that we've had in the past make their life better. But what I always tell myself is, you know, yes, you couldn't do it in the past, but you're here now and you can help so many other dogs. And like you said, like you want to be that person. I've always wanted to be, because of my shelter background, I've always wanted to just be like some sort of like advocate for people. Like, it's not the freaking dog, it's the person. Mm-hmm. Like, if you can have the most perfect dog go to the worst situations, and of course the dog's not going to thrive, you know. Mm-hmm. You could have the worst dog go into the perfect situation and the dog's going to thrive. Like, it just doesn't matter. And I think for me too, it's like I get so angry, and I'm sure you guys do as well, because you guys have had pities when it's just like on the news, pity attack, and it's just like, but golden, what happened?
Golden retrievers what happened? Probably more bites.
Golden retrievers
and dachshunds, and there's so many golden, other breeds that are much more aggressive than
golden retrievers. Actually, are the top two most likely to bite, which is crazy, because I did research when I was in college about this, and I'm like, golden retrievers, what the heck?
Well, I think it just lends to what you just said about the, you know, it's not the dog, it's the people. And so people who want that go lucky dog, that dog they don't have to train, are going to get a golden retriever because of all the media around Air Bud and like
the Air Bud generation
exactly. They're all getting golden retrievers, and it's not to say anything bad about golden retrievers or their owners. It's just, it is like one of those dog trends that we see where it's like, well, you got to train your dog either way.
And at the end of the day too, it's, you know, there's all sorts of different breeds, and some are more prone to aggression, but you can have a vicious poodle, you know what I mean? Like, it's not
little dog syndrome.
Yeah, little dog syndrome, all that sort
of stuff.
Standard
poodles are great.
Standard poodles are really great. I really love standard poodles. Yeah. I agree. Like, I was watching a video. I have to find it and send it to you guys. I was watching a video on Instagram. And there's this, like, little pity, like, he was doing, like, he was sitting pretty. So he's sitting just on his back legs, front legs up. And there's this, like, kid. I had to watch it. You saw it with the water bottle?
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So there's this kid with the water bottle, and he's just, like, hitting people. And then he comes and hits the dog. And I'm like, oh, maybe that's his kid, whatever. And then as I keep watching, I start to notice, I don't think that's his kid.
No.
And he comes back and hits the dog again, and I'm like, listen, this guy has so much patience, because let me tell you, when we're at the park, I think you guys have seen me do this before. I mean, when we're at the park, I mean you saw me the other day. I don't care. I'm sorry, but I'm also not. I don't care who you are. If you're coming up to me and my client with your dog or your kid, I will straight up tell you, you need to leave. Like, we're in a training mode. You need to leave. And I've had, Adam, you saw this the other day.
Yeah.
People will yell at me, they'll get mad at me, and they'll tell me things, and I don't care. I'm like, I don't care, because if that little pity bit that little boy, it would have been like, vicious dog. Yeah. It's like, no, this kid was hitting him with a water bottle. I mean, I wish the owner would have stood in or maybe moved away or something.
I think he threw his little hand in there. Like, I think he, like, it wasn't his kid, or wasn't a kid of, like, someone who's standing in that little circle. So he kind of just, like, put his hand to block.
No, his mom was, like, all the way at the other. Did you see that? And then she starts running away.
I don't know.
Somebody started running away, and the kid was chasing her. And I'm like, I hope that's not the mom, because your kid's all the way over here.
About to get bit by a dog because it's hitting a dog over the head.
I mean, that just brings me honestly to what happened too just recently to me at my apartment, when there's a one of my neighbors just lets her dog kind of just roam the kind of like complex right there around us.
I have neighbors like that too. It's real bad.
And it's just, you know, they let their kid out, they let their dog out at the same time, and their kid's like 3 years old. And it's their dog's intact. He's an intact male running around, marking, and just going around terrorizing other dogs that come out for walks.
That's horrible. I hate that. I think that's so scary. I mean, we saw a video, the three of us. I think you saw it too, Rachel, with the Shibas.
Oh, I didn't actually see the video.
Oh, you didn't see the video? He saw it.
Oh, yeah.
She showed us a video of one of our clients has two Shibas. They're hilarious, by the way.
I love them. Yeah, my first dogs, side note, were Shibas. So the one that I had to beg my family for. That's one of my questions. I'll hold it.
Because then we'll all share, and it's going to be fun.
Okay.
No, but she showed us a video of this giant German Shepherd coming to, like, grab them from across the street. And luckily nothing happened, but it's just, you know, people nowadays are too trusting of their dogs, I think. It's like,
the biggest disservice you can do.
And it's like, no, I don't care. My dog's not friendly.
It's the biggest disservice you can do to your dog and to other people's dogs. Because, like you said, like, your dog might be friendly, but it does not mean that it can run up on other dogs, because that creates reactivity for the other dog. And if it doesn't create reactivity, they might already be reactive, and you don't know who's going to get a bite taken out of them.
Yeah. And then it's kind of like, I always tell people, it's like, would you be okay with some stranger, like, running down from, like, a mile away or so, just running up to your face? Like, no, first of all, I'm, like, running, or, like, I'm gonna punch someone out, because why are you running up to me like that?
And it comes down to like, what we're gonna be talking about today is, you know, people personifying their dog. So it's like, they're at home, you know, this is my little baby, and he's never bitten me, and he's never done anything to me. And it's like, they don't understand that when you go out, they may have anxiety issues, they may have stuff like that. And then put them in the wrong situation, and it's a ticking time bomb.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree.
That's whenever I'm educating kids about, like, what to do around dogs, because I used to be a preschool teacher, too.
So oh, wow, yeah.
So whenever I'm educating, you know, kids on dogs, of course, if it's a parent and a child who's familiar with me, I'll start, like, petting their head and getting in their face and in their personal space, and it's like, how does this feel? How does this feel to you? Do you like it? Or do you not like it? Mm-hmm. And usually it's like a no, I don't like it, because they don't know what I'm talking about yet.
Yeah.
And then I say, well, that's how your doggy feels. How does it make you feel that your doggy feels like that when you touch him like that?
Mm-hmm.
And usually it really like is like a moment for kids when they go like, oh my gosh, I don't like being touched like that. Why do I want to make my dog feel this way?
Yeah.
And so, and I think it's, there has to be a huge change in education about with stuff kids. Like that with kids and for, I mean, and for these adults who are letting their dogs off leash and all around.
That's very true. Very true.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to come back to this topic. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I have a lot more to say about that.
Ask us your questions.
Yes. My next question. I know you can't get trainers together and talk, because then they're just going to talk about everything. Stuff, yeah, yeah. Everything's just going to come out. Okay. What do you guys love best about being a dog trainer?
Ooh, that's a good one.
What's your favorite thing? While you think, I could probably start on mine, because I feel like I had a really big moment on Sunday, which was yesterday. So you guys will see, you'll meet Riff, and I know Leslie hears my podcast, so Leslie, here's your little shout out for Riff. Riff was found tied up, I forget where, I think at a park or something. Cuts everywhere, just totally beat up, and he was found by a rescue, and he was actually taken to the prison program where they train your dog, and he stays. So he's cool being around dogs, but he has really high reactivity, really bad.
Okay.
I think it's the pity you guys saw, like, yeah, going crazy. Okay. Yeah. He was going crazy. And I have a video, which I'm going to post on our Instagram so you guys can watch too. He was really, it's bad. It's really bad.
Broke my heart from a distance.
You saw. So, you know, and hearing Riff's story, I mean, your heart breaks, because it's like, you know, why are these dogs going through this? Someone really messed you up. But, you know, during the session, I feel like the reason I love dog training is because you learn these things. And I feel like recently, I feel like our company, and we've talked about this on the podcast, but, you know, you guys haven't heard me. I feel like we've recently become more of, like, the reactivity people. Like, the people that you go to fix your reactivity. And it's just starting to kind of hit me in a sense that, like, wow, I really know what I'm doing here with reactivity. You know? Because, like, I feel like I'm kind of, like, humble. I'm like, oh, I don't know. Maybe I don't know. Maybe I don't know how to do this and that, whatever. And now I kind of doubt myself. But, you know, with Riff, I mean, I just literally in that one session, he was, and I was going up to Rachel's dog, not super close, but we're kind of going around where you guys were, and with your dog, Adam, and he was doing absolutely fantastic. He did really good. We were able to actually stop and prevent him from having reactivity, barking and lunging and growling and all that crazy stuff you guys will see in the video. And I think that's what I love about dog training, is the owners just having that relief of thinking, okay, whoa, I can breathe. My dog's going to be okay. I'm going to have a normal life with my dog. I don't have to keep him locked up. You know, and just seeing that, because you know how frustrated and how much they struggled. And it's just sad to hear and sad to watch. Especially, you know, hearing, as our previous podcasts have talked about, you know, bad dog trainers. They had a dog trainer that was actually telling them to do negative reinforcement when he was barking, which only made things so much worse.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like getting that person that, you know, can help you out. And I think that's what I love being about being a dog trainer, is we're changing people's lives. And I feel like sometimes I think to myself, I'm like, that's really dramatic, Natalie. Like, just being a little extra. But, like, I think it's so true. Like, we really are changing people's lives.
No, we're pretty much heroes, too. We are. We're pretty much up there with cops and with firefighters, dog trainers. We're right up there with them, too.
Yeah.
My husband's an EMT, so I'm like, you know what? You're a hero in the human world. I mean, we're heroes in the dog world.
Yeah, pretty much that.
I don't want to piggyback off your answer, but I think because I have that background of having my first dog and not being able to help her, she had a lot of the same reactivity issues. Like, we would go on a walk and I would just avoid all people, all animals. And I think that moment of aha for the dog is rewarding, but it's not the reason I'm in it. Right. I think the reason I really have a passion for training and want to continue training is because you can change, like you said, the owner gets relief, but the dog gets relief too. Right. And it's palpable. Like, yeah, you, as an owner of a reactive dog, you go home and you see that dog in its home and you know its personality and you know what they're like. And to be able to get that dog outside of your home and have them be the same way is such a goal for so many people, and they just don't know how to do it.
Yeah.
And being that, like I said, being that person for someone is like the number one reason. Like
gold, really.
It's I cry sometimes.
I know. Honestly, like, if it wasn't for me having another session after working with Leslie and Riff, I was, like, gonna cry. And I think she wanted to cry and probably cried afterwards. But I was just like, oh, my God, I can't believe, like, one session really did so much. I mean, we're not done, of course. There's still so much to work on. But just, I think, just seeing, like, you're capable of it. Yeah. Is amazing.
And that's awesome too. And because reactivity too, a thing to remember is it's an ongoing thing. It's in the training doesn't stop, like basic obedience where they learn something and then it's constant. So it's awesome when you see those owners that really want to work for it and that really put in that effort to where you can see that turnaround on lesson one. You know, it's like, all right, cool, this dog's gonna go a long way with these owners. And I think that's what I like the most about it, is seeing that, like, kind of, and then getting people that maybe it's their first dog to become dog people and to hopefully, like, later on, you know, adopt more dogs or get more dogs, teach their kids about dogs, you know, teach them how to train them correctly, or at least from whatever we can pass on the knowledge to them. And that, you know, we can get more dogs out of shelters that way and stuff like that.
Yeah, because if your first dog is a bad experience, you're probably going to get a cat next.
Exactly, yeah. You're going to go to a cat, or they're not for me, you know?
Yeah. Or even, like, if you have, like you said, if you have a bad experience getting a dog from the shelter or from a rescue, you're going to be like, why the heck am I going to do that again? I'm going to go get it to a breeder. And I'm not saying breeders are bad. There are bad breeders. Mm-hmm. Yes, 100%.
Absolutely. Yes.
I'm not saying breeding is bad. But, you know, unfortunately, the reality we live in is there are millions of dogs being put down in America on a daily basis, which is so heartbreaking. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And for us to, you know, get one, not get one, but get a client that, you know, needs help and we could save this dog and continue doing that, it's like, it's magic. And I love that. So yeah, I'm glad you guys had the same experience that I do. So our next question, and I guess we'll start with Rachel since she's already started telling us. Tell us about your first dog.
Oh my gosh. As a kid, I would sing all I want for, like, around Christmas time, all I want for Christmas is a little puppy. And I'm telling you, this started in October. And every single day I would just make my mom's ears bleed.
Oh my gosh.
And so for our first dog, we lived up in New Jersey at this time. Wow. Our first dog, we got a Shiba Inu. And I adored this dog. It was my absolute best friend, and she wanted nothing to do with me.
That's a shame.
She wanted nothing to do with me, and if she wanted something to do with me, it was on her terms. So she would come over and paw me when she was ready for attention.
Oh my god.
And if she didn't want me, she would just walk away. I absolutely adored her. They were escape artists. I say they because I think around 4 years later, maybe, we got a second Shiba. The first one was, right, brave. The first one was black, tan, and white. And the second one was the classic red and white. And
I love the black, tan, and whites, though. Yeah. They're so cute.
Her name was Kuma, of course, the Japanese for bear.
Yeah.
And so little Kuma, she would run away, and I have this very distinct memory. It was kind of like the one that you had with your dog where, you know, princess like clamped on to your hand, except for these dogs would run away all the time, and I was around the neighborhood looking for her, sobbing because no one else was going to help me look for her this time. Like, they were all sick of it. getting out every week. So I was walking around the neighborhood sobbing, just following after her because it was a game for her. She would stick around me, but she would never let me catch her. So this one time I just sat down on the corner of the street, just sobbing into my hands because I couldn't catch this dog. And she turned around over her shoulder. She looked at me and she was like, "Oh, this isn't a game for you." And she walked up to me and she started licking my face. And I was like, "Well, I'm going to be a dog person forever."
Honestly, that is the cutest story.
And just like little 6-year-old Rachel, I wasn't 6 at that time. I was probably I was more around 10. This was my dog encyclopedia page or stage. And so just an absolute Shibas for me are like such like a little heartbreed because they have to choose you.
Yeah,
they have to. They are cats. 100%. You're not going to get them to interact with you unless you're genuine about it. Unless you're like absolutely, like in it to give them, you know, give them what they want. Right? We're gonna talk about that. But also, like, I think there is like a very emotional side for me for Shibas where it's like. They're very intuitive, in my opinion. I think they're a very intuitive dog breed, and they can tell when you're going through it, and they'll stop running away for you.
Yeah, no, they really, really can. I mean, it's just like you said, choosing you. That's literally a cat because I saved my cat. Well, now my mom's cat. I saved my cat. His mom abandoned him, and he was like skin and bones. And if I did not find him in that day. Hours later, he probably would have been dead. Like, he was so little, and I saved him, bottle fed him, took him in. I was just fostering, but I ended up keeping him because he loved us and our family. And then, you know, he just decided that he loved my mom and he didn't really love me as much, and he does not care for me
they whatsoever. Have to choose you. It's like
so sad because it's like if it was a dog, this dog would have loved me so much for saving him, but it had to be a freaking cat. But I love him. He's adorable, but he's still just like, nope, my mom's his favorite. But yeah.
Yep.
So, okay, Adam, who is your first dog? Tell us a little bit about him.
I mean, I like to say, since I was born, we've like always had dogs. So, I mean, my first dog that I remember growing up with was Brando. He was a greyhound, like German mix or something. He's kind of a mutt, but he had a lot of greyhound because he had that long, slender body.
Oh.
And he used to get out a lot. We had a 6-foot fence, and he would scale a brick too.
Well, greyhounds are like. Very springy, powerful. Springy. There's a word.
Yeah,
I was like, what is that word? Yeah,
and springy. he would jump it. He would just jump to the top of it and then like kind of vault off of it with his paws. Again. So he would just get up there and He would get out all the time. I remember. And one time he got out and he didn't come back for a few days.
Oh,
yeah. Wow. When he did come back though, he was really messed up. I think he had gotten hit by a car when we took him to the vet, and they told us.
Oh, my God.
And so he ended up passing from those injuries.
Mm.
So from kind of that age, I had always kind of, like, even at a young age, I think I was maybe, like, 6 or 7 around the time. Mm-hmm. And I kind of thought, like, we could have done better to keep him around, to keep him in. You know what I mean? We could have done a little more training. But my parents were young at the time, too. My parents were probably in their 20s.
Yeah.
Around the time, same thing. So, you know, we had, after that, we'd gotten a, or we'd always kind of had a Cocker Spaniel. It was like my grandpa's dog.
Mm-hmm.
It was my parents' dog before they had us. They had, you know, he went in with my grandpa after, like, hey, we got kids. We can't have a dog right now, too.
Yeah.
So, he kind of took over them. And he was buddy. He was, like, the best freaking dog like that I had known at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd actually he'd done the thing that dogs do when, you know, they get old and they take off.
Yeah.
So he never we never really got to say goodbye to him.
Aww.
So that was another one I was like, man, we just keep losing dogs.
Dude. Yeah.
Like, so around the time when we got my dog Munch, the one that again passed away, I was like, all right, now we're gonna do this one right. So we took him to all sorts of like socialization things. We would take him out to like these Yosu canyons and stuff like that. We'd take him through the rocks, like around other dogs, and it got to the point, so yeah, he was extremely well trained. And that's when I kind of like realized, I was like, all right, yeah, that's when I'm gonna be a trainer when I grow up. But when it comes to first dogs, like I feel like I have like a lot of first dogs, like, yeah. I don't
know, like the first one you
that I knew growing up knew. And the first one that was mine,
yeah,
and then yeah,
first one you trained,
that I trained, yeah,
yeah.
I think all the first dogs have like a different space in in my heart, because like you can't, like for Kuma, she was like my Shiba, she was like my, like, wow, dogs are wonderful dog. Mm-hmm. For Bella the Pity, she was my, oh, like, dogs are complicated dog. And like for Blue, the dog that I have right now, is like, dogs can be your like companion, like your truest companion, because I can bring Blue anywhere and everywhere. I think, absolutely love that dog.
I think it's just after a certain number of dogs, like, you then you're just a train, like, you just make that graduation, I feel like, you're something, like, because a lot of trainers I've talked to have had similar, like, you know, they build from dog to dog, they learn certain things, and then they eventually land on, hey, you know what, I really feel like I should do something for these dogs too.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
yeah so I mean, those are all, I love that, I love to hear stories like that. And the last question is, what do you guys want people to know about you? Like, future clients, what should they know about you?
You want to take this one first?
Yeah,
Go ahead. I got to think.
So, I'm there for the dog, and I expect the people that I work with to be there for the dog as well. You know, I won't baby you to a degree. You know, if I understand that everyone has their limits, but for the most part, I do want everyone to take it a bit seriously when they're there, because they're there for their dog. You know, if you're there kind of, you know, not taking it seriously, wasting your time a bit, then you're just, you know, you're wasting your own time, wasting your own money, you're wasting your dog's time. Right. So I'm very serious when it comes down to that type of stuff, but it's only because I want the best for your dog at the end of the day. And if you're coming to me, that's what I'm expecting, is that you're wanting the best for your dog and that you want to be challenged as well. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm going to do typically. I'm going to challenge you guys. I'm going to make you guys do it a bunch of times and make you guys step out of your comfort zones a lot of the times. Because when it comes to dog training and you working with your dog, it does take certain tones, and to have a really good result when it comes to training. So I know for a lot of people, it's hard to come out of your shell, but if you want that from your dog, you gotta learn and you gotta push yourself as well as pushing your dog.
Yeah, I think like along the same lines is I'm in it because I want to help the dog. I want to help the owners have a better household. I want to help the dog have a better state of mind. And that is not going to be accomplished by beating around the bush. Mm-hmm. Like if there's something wrong in the welfare of that dog, like if that dog could be potentially put down, if that dog could potentially bite and be put down, if that dog could put another animal in danger, I'm gonna get really serious with you really quickly, and I'm gonna let you know the risks, I'm gonna let you know the rewards, and I'm gonna let you know exactly how much work you need to put in. Because without realistic expectations, boundaries, and like me just being real with you, like I like to be the nice person, I don't like conflict, I don't, you know, right. I don't like to tell people that they're wrong, or like, you know. And that's never my aim, is to tell people they're wrong. Because I've been there. Like, I've been there with Bella. Yeah. Like, I didn't know anything. And if I could have had someone in the position that I want to be in with our new clients, if I had someone like that, I would want them to be blunt with me. Mm-hmm. And I would want them to tell me exactly how it is. And that's what I want to bring to clients, is I'm going to be real with you. and I'm going to help you fix your dog. I'm going to help you learn how to work with your dog. I'm going to help you learn to fix your family life, essentially.
Like, right, right.
Yeah. It's such a big link in what happens in your home, and it's a really defining factor of how happy everyone is with each other. If your dog's acting out, it's a lot harder to have a happy home.
Yeah, no, it is. Yeah.
Basically.
No, it really is.
It does.
And so, like, when you know, a client comes in, if, you know, if the behaviors we're seeing are severe, if the home life of the dog isn't what it needs to be, I'm going to straight up and tell you, and I'm really sorry if you don't like it.
Yeah.
But if it's a fundamental change, I will try and break it to you nicely, but I'm going to be firm about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because, you know, if you are never leaving your dog alone ever at your house, as we're seeing a lot of COVID dogs.
Yeah.
So
Yes. If
your dog has never been alone, I'm sorry, I'm going to tell you need to leave your dog alone. You need to leave the house 2 to 3 hours a day. I need to leave your dog alone. And I will absolutely be the one to tell you that. And just, I'm here for the welfare of the dog, for the happiness and peace of mind of everybody. And I know what changes need to be made because of the experiences that I've had personally, the training that I've had, the mentors that I've had. You know, I've had work in service dogs. I've done work as family dogs. I've experienced hunting dogs, breeding. Like, I've been exposed to so many things, and it's such a culmination of things that, you know, you guys, clients come because we're the professionals. And
Right. Nothing
drives me crazy faster than them telling us, well, sorry, I know you're the professional, but I don't think that's right.
Yeah. I think... So.
I'll stop there.
I've definitely experienced my fair share of that. I think I've experienced it a lot more because I am... When I was, like, first starting out, because I was young and I was a girl, and it's like, okay, girl, what do you know?
Yeah, I think I get that a lot. I think, sorry, Adam, we can't relate. I think I get that a lot.
I was honestly going to say, too, it's a little bit because being a man in the dog training world, I feel like sometimes, too, especially at previous places that I worked, I feel like I was looked at. Secondly, especially with the new form of dog training, with the positive only, I feel like being a man in the industry, I'm instantly seen as a little bit more aggressive, or maybe would have a little bit more of an aggressive style.
Interesting.
Like, yeah. Just based off of that. And I've had even clients, too, a lot of different clients come up to me, and they expect to be like, oh, yeah, should I just yank the dog? Like, no, dude, don't. Like, they expect me to be old school or something like that. And then, like,
I think it's a double-edged sword. I think for guys or people who identify as male, it's a...
Oh, yes, thank you for the save.
No, exactly. No, yeah. No, you're good. You're good. I think that it is such a double-edged sword because you're right. Science has shown that having a kinder method with positive reinforcement and being fair to the dog and what it knows and what it doesn't know... I think that's like a totally new training style. And for some reason, there are some people who, you know, maybe they had a dog 10 years ago and they were like, oh yeah, I know how to do this. And then they come to somewhere like this and then they have that sort of mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to hear it though, from a female or someone who identifies as female, for us to tell them, hey, you need to stop yanking your dog around. I think that for us, it comes off as like, oh, we're just being soft.
Mm-hmm.
But then when it's the same thing is said by someone who identifies as male, it's like, oh, like I didn't think about it
that
way.
Freeing.
But then, yeah, but yeah, yeah. Okay. But then I also see the other side where it's like I can absolutely see someone saying to you like, oh, like, well, do I yank the dog around? Like, is this how you do it? Is this, and it's just like, no, please, don't do that.
I mean, like, I've experienced that where this guy, him and his wife and his son would come, gorgeous black shepherd, but he was, I mean, the most, what is the word I want to say?
Macho.
Yeah, macho, and just like very.
I think there's a, I'll say the phrase, toxic masculinity.
Yes. I was thinking of the word. It's not that I didn't want to say that. I was just thinking of what word would really fit. And he was just, you know, the first day they didn't bring any treats. And I always hate when people don't bring treats to training. But I'm like, you know what? First day, whatever. Take some treats. You know, and then, you know, the things he was saying was, I was trying to just be like, maybe I'm taking it that way, but it's not that way. You know, I was trying to be fair, open-minded. And the second session, this guy, like, I already knew I was not going to be okay with this guy. Him and his wife did not show up to one session, just didn't show up. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, I'm going to charge you guys because it's in the contract. And you guys just decided not to go. You guys said you were coming and then you just didn't show up.
Yeah.
Then the second time I was going to meet them, I canceled because I had a family member pass away, and we made them aware, me and Jenny. Jenny does the office, made them aware of what was going on, said, okay. So the third time, I still hadn't gotten paid. And the third time, I was going to tell him at the end of the session, I already had it all planned out, and he came again. They didn't come with treats. This was their second session. He didn't have any treats, and he just goes, I'm like, okay, let's see, let's start off, like, let's review, let's do a sit. And he just goes, doesn't say anything, just puts his hand out to me. And I'm like, what? Like, what's going on? And he's like, well, I need treats. And I'm like, you didn't bring treats again? And that, I think, was in my phase when I was being a little too nice to people, and I wasn't using my voice as well as I feel like I do now. And I feel like I let him get away with that, and in a sense of like, I felt a little I felt very disrespected, but I didn't voice it. Mm-hmm. And it was really annoying and I hated it. So then at the end of the session, we did the whole session, whatever. He just does things here and there that it's just weird and rude and, you know, whatever. So at the end of the session, I explained to him, okay, well, now you guys got to pay me. And you're paying me for three sessions, even though we've done two, because one of them you didn't show up. Mm-hmm. And he was just like gaslighting me, of course. He was like, well, we didn't come to a session because someone died. And it's not something nice that somebody should say, like, well, we didn't come to one because, you know, I think someone in your family might have passed away, and I think we had to count. Yeah, it wasn't like that. It was like dismissive. He was very dismissive, like, well, it's your fault, not mine. Like, nobody, it's almost like it's on my fault someone died. It's like, okay, but whatever. So he was like arguing, and he started like yelling at me, very, very rude. And I kind of got like kind of scared because I was alone it was at the resort at the time, and I was alone in the office with him. He even yelled at his wife to leave because she was trying to calm him down and like explain things to him because she understood. Mm-hmm. And he was just yelling at the top of his lungs to me, and I was like really shocked and really scared, and I was like, oh my God. And I was like, no. And everything I said, he wasn't taking. And then I knew I couldn't call him the next day and cancel all those sessions because I'm like, I'm not working with you. No. So I had my husband do it. I'm like, please call him. He's so evil. I don't want to talk to him. And of course, it went down very differently because my husband identifies as a male. Mm-hmm. And of course, it was a whole different. And that for me was like, I feel like it woke me up, and I'm like, you know what? Like, I have to tell people what I feel. And that's what we're talking about. Like, honesty, you know, like you have to be honest. Like, look, I'm sorry if you feel like I am saying things in a rude or disrespectful way, but at the end of the day, we've all stated, we are all here for the dog. We are here to make sure the dog is better and is achieving the goals that you want your dog to achieve, you know?
And at the end of the day, we're kind of in a time crunch, you know. You guys are on your schedule for an hour, and we don't have time to talk about your guys' dog and everything like that.
We don't have time to dilly dally and beat around the bush about what
happened. Yeah, we definitely have to like just get straight to the point. Here. And like going back, like, you know, I felt like you were saying, sometimes it's like, if you say something, they'll take it as this way or that way, and it's hard to really. Mm-hmm. obviously you don't want to be rude to someone, and I don't think we are. I think we're just stern, but I think a lot of people might take it as us being rude.
Yeah.
I think that's a lot of the times because people communicate so differently in their interpersonal relationships.
Yeah.
And for us, I mean, every time I'm about to be blunt, I say, I'm about to be really blunt and upfront with you right now about what has to happen. This, this, and this.
Right.
And I try to preface it with that because I don't, like I said, I don't want to come off as confrontational. I'm not that person. But like you said, Adam, we're on a time crunch.
Yeah.
Like, I can't beat around the bush and say it the way that you want me to say it because it will never get said in the time that we have.
Right.
And that's something that I learned from Glenda. Our mentor. Yeah, from the same because, yeah, she's very non-beat around the bush.
Yeah.
And you just see the results.
She's hilarious.
She's funny. You've done one with her before.
Yeah,
right?
I worked with her for I think almost 2 years. Yeah, I worked with her and it was an
awesome
experience. I love learning from her. She's a really great person, and I'm really glad that we can still keep in touch and have, like, you know, conversations here and there about what's going on in our lives. And she's hilarious because I came from a background where you're Hispanic, and in the Hispanic world, they tell you have to be very nice, respectful, never speak up, never talk back to anyone, never be rude. Like, especially I think as a girl, it's like really ingrained in you.
Yeah.
So I was always like super quiet. I wouldn't say anything. I was really just kind of like, oh, you said something mean? Okay, sure. Yeah, I gotta take it. And she would do it. It's funny because she'd do it in front of people too. Like, she'd tell me behind the scenes, like, you gotta be like, she wasn't nice. Not nice. Not that she wasn't nice. She wasn't like you were saying, like lollygagging or whatever. She was just like, hey, you gotta be direct. You gotta be more honest. You can't be more shy. Just speak up. She's like, you know way more than all of these people here. And I think that always stuck with me. And I'm like, yeah, that's true. Like, you know, even though they were older than me, a lot of the clients were older than me at the time. Like,
they're here for your information.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, yeah, like I said, we're the professionals.
Yeah.
And a lot of the times, my experience with some toxic masculinity around during consults and stuff has been, all right, this is my professional opinion. This is what needs to happen. This is what I'm offering you.
Yeah.
And at the, you know, wrapping up the consultation. And I've gotten some, well, what makes you think that? What made you come to that conclusion? And it's just like,
so annoying.
Well, sir, I'm the professional. That's why I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm observing.
All of my stuff is science based, and I have experience with this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what more you want from me.
I think it's hard for some people because, you know, once you're in a field and you're like really like good at that field, or you've experienced so much in that field, like you can just look at something and be like, oh yeah, it's that. Like,
yeah,
definitely. Like, you don't even need to sit there for an hour or whatever.
Exactly.
You just know, like, oh yeah. So I think that, like, people do, and I had another experience similar to that. Some guy was like, oh, I have a dog, super aggressive, and I want to do training. And he came for a consultation, and the dog is German Shepherd. As sweet as can be, I don't remember her name, but this is a while ago. And she would, like, come up and lick me, and then she was loose off leash in the yard, running around. Obviously, like, an aggressive dog could not be able to do that, wouldn't come up to me and just say hi. And people would pass by, and I think she barked like one or two times, and I'm like, okay, it's reactivity. I'm like, okay, your dog's not aggressive, like blah, 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 blah. Oh, he did not like that. And I told him what the price was, and he's like, well, how much was it last year? I bet it wasn't that much. How much was it 10 years ago? I'm like, well, I'm not talking about 10 years ago.
Do you know what inflation is? Like,
10 years ago. And also, I mean, and whenever they question your professional opinion about behavior or about what you know or about the science-based training that we do now, it's like, well, I've had dogs for 20 years. I'm like, sir, the training world has changed a lot.
Not just the training world, but also the breeding.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, there's so many more breeders that are not really good breeders. They're just doing it like backyard breeders. Doing it for the money, and you don't know what you're getting because they're not quality. I don't want to say quality, but they're not quality trained.
They're not qualified. It's
qualified. Yeah.
Yeah.
Their parents weren't temperament tested.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have an uneven temperament,
and they have behavioral issues, and there's just a lot of things going on, and that's another thing that has changed. So he was so upset. He yelled at me at the session. And he was like, I'm going to think about it. Blah, blah, blah. And then he called 2 times the office. Me and Jenny were just like,
we were upset about
what the outcome was, because obviously like the dog was really easy to train and he just wasn't listening. But it was also kind of funny because he was just like, who does she think she is saying my dog's not aggressive? She is super aggressive. I'm like,
do you want your dog to be aggressive?
Yeah.
I don't understand.
So me and Jenny were, and I just told her, because there's some people you just can't reason with, honestly. Yeah. Like, there's no point in continuing a conversation. There's no point in forcing it. You know, the more you force it, it's like, they're going to be unhappy. You're going to be unhappy. It's just going to be a really horrible ending. So I was just like, you know what, Jenny, just let him have his opinion and let's just move on with our day. I don't even want to continue it because it's not worth it.
It's not
worth it at that point.
I figured that out over some time. And I had done some consults, do privates for myself, as you know, training independently in the past. And it was during a time where like you never want to need clients, but I needed clients at the time. And so I was, you know, going around and it used to upset me so much because I was like, I need clients. And like, why are they all like this?
Yeah. I think part of it is people's understanding of what dog training is.
Yeah.
And kind of because they expect to come in and then we just, you know, we teach you this. This is how you do this. And, you know, I feel like that's maybe very PetSmart kind of training. Like, that's what they do, is they just, you know, do commands and stuff like that. But I feel like when you get into the professional realm, is you start to have to tell people kind of how to adjust their life at home, like when it comes to feeding schedules with their dogs. And I think when you kind of start to get into that stuff that we know as dog training, like, that's going to help with consistency.
It's a holistic approach. Versus a Band-Aid.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I think they see it as like, wait, I got to do more work, like, hold on. And it's like, yeah, people, we got, you know,
yeah, if, you gotta do this and that.
Yeah, it's like, if you really want the best for your dog, it's like, you welcoming a dog in your home is, it's life-changing. Yeah. if you want to do it right.
I think we're doing that trainer thing again. We're talking
I know we're gonna have to derail the name of this.
We gotta we gotta change the episode name, and then we have to do another episode where it's really about what we were supposed to be talking Okay, guys, that was our episode of Meeting Our Trainers. I hope you loved that episode. And tune in next week where we will be talking about dogs versus humans. And we will also be joined by Adam and Rachel. So stay tuned for next week, and I hope you guys have a wonderful day. Bye.